Welcome to Journals of a Healer, Unleash Your Hidden Genius. Once in a while, we find someone who knew right from the beginning what they wanted to do and just went about it and just had a wonderful time. But sometimes our family and friends and our various guidance counselors, whatever, try to steer us along a different way. And our friend today, who's coming in, Brigitte, she is definitely one of those. Went from the time she was three, she was happily creating wonderful, beautiful things. And then somebody tried to talk her into becoming a biologist or a chemist or some kind of thing, and she finally got back to what she's really doing. So I can't wait to talk with her and find out how that journey turned out. So welcome, Brigitte. So happy to have you on our show.
Thank you, Mary, for choosing me to be on your show. It's been, it's been great to speak with you, and hopefully we can have a good conversation.
Absolutely. I would love to talk about the three-year-old you and all your wonderful creations.
Okay.
So where did you start?
In kindergarten. Actually, before that, I was one of these children who rather played with a clothes hanger than with a bought toy. So, in kindergarten, I got myself in trouble quite a bit by not following the rules. The rules meaning, you are told when to play and when to nap and when to eat. And that was never my thing. I just wanted to do what I wanted to do and in the time frame I wanted it. So I had to stay after hours a lot when other people were allowed to play in the yard or go home, I had to be inside sitting on a chair.
Oh, not fair.
No,
not
that was
fair.
Not fair. Yes.
No.
And sometimes when my mother passed by the kindergarten, she would see my hair bouncing in the window, which was high enough. They put me on the piano, so I couldn't crawl down. And everybody was singing, and I had to sit on top of the piano, so I could not interfere. Yes, so I couldn't interfere with anyone.
Oh no! Oh, that's dreadful. Just dreadful.
Yeah, looking back, it probably was. For me, it was a challenge to be more creative.
There you go. Yeah, well, I have kind of a similar situation myself. I was the one who hated to take naps. I just couldn't do it. And then my number two daughter was I got a call from the first grade teacher. And she said, "We're having so much trouble with Mindy." And I can't believe it because Mindy was just a delight, you know. And
yeah.
And so I said, "Well, is she?" I asked all the questions: Is she doing her homework? Is she getting along with the children? Is she progressing nicely? And oh yes. I said, "Well, what's the problem?" You know. And she said, "Well, Mindy just won't conform."
Yeah.
Well, she'd better not conform. I'm not raising any sheep.
That's right.
So the the teacher said, oh, I think I'm beginning to understand the problem here. And then I thought, well, maybe I'd better find out, how is she not conforming? And
yeah.
The teacher said, well, she said, the perfect example, the other day we were making turkeys. And Mindy had just the prettiest turkey in the class. And yes, I only turned my back for a minute. And in that minute, she took her brush and she put it into every color she could find and put those colors on the turkey's tail. And
that's
I said,
right.
Well, that sounds lovely. She says, it wasn't the turkey we were making. So I had to work with my Mindy and let her know that we did the certain things we did at home, and her teacher just simply didn't understand. So it was, but I just felt for you so when I read that. I'm thinking, my goodness, sitting on the piano, my word.
Yeah, so, or they had me sitting on a chair, looking out the window while other people, the other children were playing in the garden, and I had to watch them.
My heavens, this sounds absolutely dreadful. But how did you get over it? Were your parents sympathetic? Did they understand?
Yes, you know, my parents at first they didn't really understand when I said, you know, they made me stay longer. I had to sit in the corner on the chair. And so they didn't know why this happened. They thought I was bad, you know, and I was being punished for being bad. And then later they found out that it was because I was I was challenging the teachers too much, with being too open and free and creative, probably. And the last thing I did before my parents took me out of kindergarten was, everybody had a towel, and to identify your towel, it was on a hook with like a picture of either a flower or a bug or animal or something. And mine was the ladybug. So I was sick. And when I returned, they gave my ladybug plaque to a child that was new. And I said, why did you do that? And I was four.
Uh-huh.
I said, but why did you do that? That's my hook.
Yeah.
And they said, well, you were sick, and we just gave it away. So what I did was I went to the bathroom and I took every towel off the hooks and I put it in a pile in the middle of the floor.
I said,
so that's what you get, that's what you get for giving away my hook.
Yeah, and they stole your hook. That wasn't fair.
Yes, it wasn't fair. So my kindergarten teacher called my mother over, and she said, you know, we really have to speak with you, and your daughter is being so naughty, and this is what happened. And my mother said, well, she has a point. It was, excuse me, it was her hook from the beginning, and now you gave it away, and she loves ladybugs. So, you know what, we're taking her out of kindergarten and we do this at home.
Aha. Uh-huh. Good
and,
for them.
Yeah, and that's basically when I was no longer to be in kindergarten. And it was much, much happier because, you know, I could just live out my my creativity, the way I wanted to play, which wasn't always quiet or clean, but at least my mother was totally okay with it. And, you know, when I got sick, I got a coloring book. And, you know, she was really trying to nurture that I was good at drawing and painting. And mm-hmm. another thing that was in kindergarten, I used to paint with my left hand. And the teacher slapped my left hand, put the crayon in my right hand, and said, "Use your nice hand."
Oh my goodness!
So, and that was another thing, you know. So, I basically wasn't allowed to use my left hand.
Uh huh.
But now now I can actually write halfway legible with my left hand, but I'm using my right hand to write. But a lot of tasks I do with my left hand because it's a stronger one.
Yeah, I understand. Well, this is amazing. And, of course, in a way, after we studied the brain, we understand that using both hands is good for the brain. But as a child, it's terrible to imply that you're the hand that you want to use, that you're comfortable using, is the bad one.
That's right. Yeah.
Was your mother artistic?
Yes, my mother is was. A tailor for male and female, and she did her own patterns. She was very creative in dressmaking. So in today's age, you would probably say she was a designer, like a fashion designer.
Uh-huh, sure.
And when my sister and I, when we were little, she would make almost all of our clothes. They were just the prettiest clothes, with
smoking
and with ruffles and with lace. I mean, they were just absolutely adorable. And I didn't think so at the time because I was somewhat a little tomboy. And dresses and I didn't really go hand in hand. They went very well with my sister, who was the girly girl. And she looked like a little girl. I looked like something out of I don't know what, but I was always dirty. If there was a big ditch with a lot of mud, I probably was very close, if not in it.
So, I see. Well, you know, creativity is pretty messy, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. And so, yes, my mother was creative, and so actually was my dad. My dad grew up on a farm, and he made a lot of things out of wood when he was growing up. And when he was out of school, he actually made books, but very artistic books, you know, printmaking.
Oh, how
art
nice.
Books.
Uh-huh.
And I still have two books that he was working on, but they are in Germany with my sister. And but when he married my mother and I was on the way, then he said, I don't make enough money to, you know, give my family a good life.
Uh-huh.
So he studied to become a chemist. And but he was still creative. He had a whole workshop in the basement, like
mm-hmm.
a woodworking shop in the basement. And he did the most incredible little things, you know, for all the children in the neighborhood. He made little ducks that, you know, had moving parts. And, I mean, he just built a lot of things, again, out of wood. So
uh-huh.
I had creativity on both sides. And my grandfather, he was also very artistic, but in a different field. He was more in the musical field. He played the violin and, you know, so accordion and the violin. So so I had artistic people in my family, my immediate family. So, yeah, that's probably where the artistry sort of was a little manifested and came in.
So when you went to school, then in your higher grades, in college or gymnasium, I think you call it, were you encouraged to study there?
Just the regular curriculum, which I basically wasn't very interested in. So homework was a very foreign word. I basically never did homework, and I didn't study for tests either. So I was, in a sense, a very bad student. In teacher's terms, I was a bad student because I didn't do what they wanted me to do. So what happened was, you know, I basically didn't do what was expected. So they gave me extra homework. Yes. So one time I was given extra homework because I passed around notes, and it was to give them my teacher to give him a report about environmental toxins in the water, the air, and the soil. I think I was 14 or 15 or something like that. Probably 15, I'm not sure. So what he didn't expect me to do was giving him a report of 63 pages.
Oh, my goodness.
So he wanted to punish me.
So they finally found something you were interested in, huh?
Right. But it was more, not really interested. Yes and no. But to give me those extra homework was a punishment. So I wanted to punish him for punishing me.
I see.
And it worked. It totally worked.
Okay.
And another time I had to do a report on Sweden. So I basically studied whatever I could about Sweden, and I gave an hour, 45-minute long monologue about Sweden. And he expected maybe 5 or 10 minutes. No, it was the whole class, the entire 45 minutes. And I just didn't stop. So he had no choice but give me an A.
Oh, I see.
So again, it was punishment for being punished.
I see. Okay, so you got even.
I basically got even, and they never attempted to give me extra homework again.
That's remarkable. So that you really overloaded them, so that they were overwhelmed, huh?
Probably, yes. And the same thing with essays. If we had to do an essay, my essays was so long that a teacher said, please not another novel next time. limit yourself to 3 or 4 pages, please.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
That's really very interesting that you really triumphed in your own way. It's quite I don't usually encounter people who were so self-aware and completely in control in their school. In the early days, it's totally remarkable.
Yeah. Well, you know, teachers often say or ask students when they're really young, like maybe 9, 10, 11, what would you like when you grow up? Mm-hmm. My teacher did this too. So the normal response of children is usually something, if their mother is a hairdresser, they want to be a hairdresser. If the father is a police officer or works for the railroad, they want to do the same thing. Or if the mother is a doctor or the father a lawyer, they want to be something like what their parents are, right?
Right.
So now everybody was, you know, taking turns explaining what they wanted to be. And now it was my turn. And I got up and I said, I want to be an artist. So my teacher made a face. Why would you want to be an artist? What kind of artist? Don't you want to be like a tailor or a hairdresser? I said, no, that's boring stuff. I want to paint. I want to be an artist and a mother and bake cookies.
That's wonderful.
That totally threw her off. My teacher didn't know what she should do with that. She said, but why would you want to do that? I said, because it's nice to be with your children and do creative stuff with them so they are creative people, and I want to bake because it tastes good.
I love it. That's amazing.
And so I always threw them for a loop. They didn't know what to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother was called into a school frequently, and they said, you know, if Bridget just would study, she could do anything. She is so bright. She could be anything, but she's just lazy. I wasn't challenged. I know that now.
Exactly.
You know,
and
I know what you mean,
but it seems like the most talented the children and the things that make a really wonderful whole an adult are very, very uncomfortable for teachers to deal with.
Yes.
It just seems that way to me, and they are trying to put everybody into fitting them into a little mold like a little cookie cutter, and that's terrible, isn't it?
It is. At least that's how it was 50 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, when I entered school, that's the mold they created. And every child had to fit into that mold.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I think they're a little more open, you know, with special programs for gifted kids in different
mm-hmm.
areas. So they could develop differently in what they are actually good at. But back then, it was just one set rule. And everybody had to follow it. The same thing with handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was another thing. Everybody was supposed to write in a specific pattern.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't do that. I always had a chicken scratch.
Okay.
You couldn't read what I was writing. Even as a child.
Well, you were using the wrong hand.
That's probably it. And I just didn't write the way they wanted me to.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I hear
you.
So,
yeah, I mean, it was somewhat of a little challenge. But I always knew what I wanted to be. And
uh-huh.
I was an artist.
And you are an artist, is that right?
Yes, I am. It took a while. It took a couple of decades to arrive.
Tell me about some of those false starts. When they tried to put you down the wrong path, how did that work out?
that didn't work out at all because, you know, I studied biology, physics, and chemistry and math, which is, it's not what I want to do. And, I mean, it's useful in many areas, I guess, but I just didn't, it wasn't my thing. So 2 months before exam time, I quit.
Really?
I just dropped out. I said, this is not what I want to do, so why would I want to be certified? Why would I want to have a certificate? Of course, I was 19, and that was a pretty stupid move. It was just right before my 20th birthday. So that was pretty stupid, looking back. I mean, these 2 months would have not killed me.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I just felt this was enough, and my father wasn't happy. My mother wasn't happy. Well, but after 18 in Germany, you can make your own decisions.
Uh-huh.
So you don't need your parents' permission. And so I went along, and it just wasn't for me. So I took odd jobs. The first job was as a receptionist for a computer company. And they trained people in computer language. And, of course, back then, a computer was filling sort of like a half a room. They
of
were
course.
Incredibly big. And so I didn't really feel that I was useful as a receptionist. So I taught myself Fortran 1, computer language. And,
sure.
So I wanted to do something different. But that wasn't really appreciated. So basically I left that company and I went to a temp agency. And I worked for American Express to look at slides and to work for another bank. I think it was Deutsche Bank. I'm not sure. Yeah, I think so. Either Deutsche or Dresdner. And to do something filing, and then I worked for another company to write, I don't even know for what it was, because I don't speak Spanish or French to know what I'm reading, but we were transcribing text in Spanish and French. And it must have been terrible Spanish or French, because I don't know what I'm doing. But and then I got married for the first time. I went to the United States and didn't like it. It was in Texas. So I returned to Germany after having everything in and around my house that is behind glass in a zoo. So I wasn't really happy being there and going back to in the United States. I did I worked retail in the bathroom department of a department store, and as a phlebotomist, that's in a blood bank. That's when my biology training kicked in, so I could do that.
Right.
And it was actually funny. When I applied for the job, the nurse said, but you don't have a certificate. I said, you know, I can find the vein of a mouse. I'm sure I can find the vein of a person. That statement
got
me
hired. No kidding. That's interesting. It's amazing.
I mean, that statement got me hired.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, so after I went back to Germany, I went to, it was a company that does bus tours for mostly Asian companies, travel agencies in Germany. And I learned a few words Japanese, but not enough to win any prizes. And it was just enough to get more tips.
I see.
So that was good. And after that, I worked for an orthodontist as a receptionist, but I had too many questions. So he told me that I should come where the patients are to see what is being done, so I know when I have to put it in the chart what it is for.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very interested in that. And again, I had a million questions. And after a few days, he said, "Why don't you cut out an arch wire?" I said, "Me?" He said, "Yes. You have enough questions. You should now know how to do it. So go ahead and do it." And I cut out the arch wire, no problem at all. And I said, "You know, but I think we need to bend it a little more so it has more pull." And he said, "Oh, really? Oh, now you are an orthodontist?" I said, no, I'm just saying." He says, "Okay, so make a suggestion." So I made a suggestion, and he said, "You shouldn't be a receptionist. You are wasted behind the reception. From now on, you assisting me at the chair."
Okay.
So that was for like 2 years, and I got a raving recommendation. And then I did a few more art jobs because somehow when my husband returned from the United States to join me in Germany, we moved to a new apartment, and I worked then for rental car company, a smaller one at the airport. And then I went to a bigger company. I don't know if it's allowed to name companies, so I'm not naming any companies.
Okay.
And and that's where I worked for 7.5 years in
mm-hmm.
reservations, international reservations. And then I met my second husband. I divorced the first one, and he went back to the United States. And then I met my second husband, who was a PhD chemist.
Uh-huh.
And so my former training in sciences came in handy to have conversations, which was nice. And so we went to the United States after he was transferred back when his project ended in Germany, and I followed. So again, I did odd jobs for a home healthcare agency as the coordinator and go-to person for emergencies at night and over the weekends. And then as a secretary administrative assistant, how they say, it's a secretary. And I was a really bad one because I can't be on time. And, you know, I was reprimanded all the time, like, "You're undermining the morale of your other coworkers by showing up an hour and a half late." I said, "But you don't have any work for me in the morning, so why would I sit here? I mean, really? Why would I do that? And then go home at 5, and then you give me more work. So that doesn't make sense. So I come when I please, like at 10:30. I make myself coffee. Then I wait for you to give me work. Then I take lunch break. And then afterwards, I do what needs to be done. And I go home at 8, 9 o'clock. And you have your stuff in the morning. So everybody wins, right?" He didn't like that. So, and then I split from my second husband. When I met Steve, my late husband, he said, "You're not happy. Why are you working in a job that you really don't like?"
Uh-oh.
I said, "Well, you know, I need to pay bills, and you know, and they pay okay." And he said, "But you really shouldn't do that." He said, "Why don't you quit and follow your heart?"
Now there's a man for you. Oh my.
That was a man. Absolutely. He said, I don't want you to be unhappy. You're dreading on Friday afternoon that you have to show up there again on Monday morning.
Mm.
He said, don't do it. So I quit and did photography, you know, headshots and model portfolios and stuff, which was very nice.
Uh-huh.
We were in New Jersey in Fort Lee. And so, you know, sometimes I did it here in the city. Sometimes I went back to Summit, New Jersey, where I previously lived. And it was really nice. So, but when we moved to the city, at first we basically enjoyed ourselves. We took little day trips, you know, to Nyack and all over, you know, the tri-state area. And so, you know, after a while, I rearranged our apartment all the time and new colors. And I skim coated the walls and I did all kinds of other things. And, you know, so he said, maybe you should, you know, look into design. And my friend upstairs, she said, you know, you're helping everybody do their apartment. You really have a good sense of style. Why don't you do interior design? I said, Rosemary, I don't think I'm cut out for that. She said, but you have a good talent. I said, I don't know. She said, but think about it. You told me in Germany you helped your friends and your cousin and everybody who asked you about colors and about furniture style and everything, and now you're doing it again for, you know, yourself and for friends. She said, why don't you make this your business? So I let it marinate for a little while, and I said, you know what? She's right. Why not? So I took classes in interior design, and I think I was pretty good. So I found clients, and they were actually happy with the results. And that's what I do now.
That's marvelous. So now you're on your own again. I think you said your late husband.
Yes, he passed away almost 2 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry that you lost such a wonderful, wonderful husband who understood you and wanted you to be happy.
Yeah.
And you had it.
It's not easy.
As they say.
It's not easy. But, you know, it's a wonderful thing to know that a good, harmonious relationship is possible. If you look at most people, they always bicker and fight and split up like I did with my first two husbands. I mean, we loved each other, but we were not cut out to be married to each other.
Sure.
Which doesn't mean they were both bad men. They were wonderful men.
Yeah.
But we weren't supposed to be together as a union.
You were just allergic to them.
Maybe. No, but I'm still friends with my second husband.
That's good.
So, you know, we're good friends, but we were not good married.
Right.
So,
different values and different needs. That makes a difference, doesn't it?
That's quite right, yes. So, to be able to be with Steve for almost 15 years was amazing. I mean, we really never had a big disagreement. I mean, he smoked. That's what basically killed him. He had throat cancer. And that was basically the only time when we ever had a disagreement. You know, like I said, I smoked and I quit cold turkey. Why can't you do the same?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, but it is what it is. And in everything else, he was just a very special person. I mean, really special.
Huh? Yeah, that was very fortunate.
Yeah.
So, how do you work with other people? Do you ever work with young people who are not sure whether they want to be an interior designer or not? Do you ever take on interns or anything like that?
No, I haven't. Most of the time, just lately, last week, I went to pick out color at a store. And in walks in a young man, and he said, I'm here to pick up a few samples of wallpaper, if that's okay. So the store clerk said, yes, sure. And when we were sort of like finished, I asked the young man, I said, you know, what is it for? He said, oh, I have a project from school. I said, what kind of school? He's going into, he's going to the design school. And, he studies architecture and interior design. So he has a project. And so we started talking about it, and I actually gave him recommendations how to set up his project so it is very unique and different and stands out. And so, I mean, he was very nice. So I gave him my number and I said, if you ever need, like, a project and I can help you, I'm here. I said, because you seem like a very nice young man. I mean, he must have been like maybe 18, 19, I would think. And so he was like, okay, yes, I will definitely contact you. Your suggestions were really amazing. And, you know, he was very happy. So, yeah, I like to speak with young people. At the MoMA, for instance, I came across a young girl from Japan, and she studies here at Columbia University. And so we were looking at a display of electronic equipment. And there was actually a turntable that I owned in the 80s.
Oh, my.
That was a little of a wake-up call to see my turntable in a museum. That made me kind of old, right?
Yeah. I know.
So,
I saw so many things in the MoMA that I owned through the years. And, of course, some of the things I got as wedding presents. And so I was saying, oh, I used to have this, and I used to have that, and I used to have this.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's kind of almost watermarks, you know. There are timeline. Life goes on, and you're still here. And it's
correct.
Quite fascinating,
yes.
Isn't it?
So it's fascinating. And that young woman, she looked at, you know, the plaque, what this turntable is. And I said, I just barged in. I said, you know, I owned that turntable. I said, this is a DJ's turntable from the 80s. I said, it's a remarkable turntable. So I went on and on and on, and she said, oh, you know a lot about turntables. I said, yeah, I used to DJ a little bit. But not, I mean, not on a regular basis and not for a profession, but just for fun. And so I said I had a mixer and two turntables and, you know, a tape deck and whatever. So, and 2,000 LPs. And, you know, I mean, it was nice when I was in my 20s. So, so anyway, we were talking, and she said, "Oh, I'm studying interior design." I said, "Oh, really?" So I said, "I'm an interior designer." She said, "Oh my God, that's amazing!" She had a project too, so I again told her or suggested. I didn't tell her what to do, but I suggested what she could do with her project to again stand out from the crowd.
Yeah.
I said, because sometimes what you learn in school, it's great, but when you have experience with what people actually can live with, or coming from a photographer's perspective, what looks good on paper, meaning on a photograph. And so I said, you should incorporate all of those criterias to make it look good on paper or on a screen. I mean, if you have your portfolio online, it's a little different, but than if you have your portfolio in an actual portfolio. So, yes, I do very much like to speak to young people, teenagers, about interior design and how to develop their skills and to find their niche, you know, because not everybody can do everything. So
What is your favorite area in the interior design? Do you ever do commercial, or do you always just do residential, or what is your forte?
Okay, right now I just have done residential, and my favorite thing is doing small and tiny apartments.
Interesting, made for New York City. Oh my!
Yes, yes. I mean, not everybody. Of course, there are people who want bigger apartments and huge apartments and the biggest houses on the block. But reality is that a lot of people also want to reduce their footprint, their environmental and carbon footprint. So in New York, it's basically a challenge to find an apartment that's big enough to house all your stuff and still be affordable. So people go smaller and smaller and smaller, and then they have all the stuff they don't know what to do with, because there's no closet, there is no storage, they don't have a storage in the basement. They no attic, nothing. So that's basically where I come in. And first we evaluate what they really need and then what they really love. And stuff they just don't want to let go of because it came from the grandmother or from a favorite aunt, or it was a gift from their husband or boyfriend or whoever. And then we find a solution, or basically I find a solution, where to put all that stuff. So I make suggestions how to do built-ins. That's a really huge thing. In a small apartment, it makes the apartment smaller, but it gives you more storage. So having more storage spaces and have the stuff hidden in cabinets or under furniture, like a captain's bed, for instance, or you build up, you know, a storage space above if you have very high ceilings. And you have a ladder to get your stuff from a platform, for instance, or you put your bed up. And So, you know, I'm not a big fan of Murphy beds, I have to admit. But loft beds, they're fun because you still see what you have. You have a real bed, you know, whatever. So, you know, so small spaces and tiny spaces are really what interests me the most, although I had with my husband almost 1,800 square feet, and I was very happy to decorate 1,800 square
wonderful.
Feet.
Wonderful, in New York City? Wow.
In New York City, on the Upper West Side. But that one is gone. That apartment is gone. And now I'm living in a small apartment, and I'm just renovating my own apartment, which is 300 square feet. So I will live in what I preach.
Oh, my goodness.
It's going to be really, really pretty.
Oh, I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will. But my goodness, are you still on the West Side?
No, I'm in Upper New York.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I moved to Harlem.
Where?
I moved to Harlem. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sure. A lot of people are moving up to Inwood and to the Heights up there. Washington Heights.
And Washington Heights, Inwood. Yeah. That's that's the new downtown.
Right. Absolutely.
No, really.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. It's basically the new downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Because rents are still affordable. Most artists, a lot of artists and young people, they move uptown because they can't afford downtown or midtown or upper west or east side. They just they price people out of their neighborhood.
Okay.
So they have to move away.
I agree. You know, it makes a huge difference. So when you work with people, what is the best advice you give people who are planning to make something special from their homes? Make their apartment into something unusual and beautiful.
I mean, apartments are for real people, so it should always reflect the personality of the person who lives there. So people should keep what they love, even if a magazine says that the stuff doesn't go together. What if you love something, it will go together.
Uh-huh. I hear you. I agree 100%.
It's just like it was said that people shouldn't wear brown and black in the same outfit. Why not?
Coco Chanel proved that was wrong. When I was growing up, you couldn't put blue and green together. And I said, well, what's wrong with it? All of the blue flowers have green leaves. I don't know what's wrong with it.
Yeah. No, one of my friends, I helped her with her bedroom, and she wanted a pink bedroom. And then she said, you know, it's very pink. I said, yeah. So what could we do to make this a little more lively? I said, we do orange.
I love it.
Orange
complimentary color scheme, huh?
Yeah. She said, but orange and pink doesn't really go together. I said, oh, yes, it will.
And she was happy?
She was ecstatic. But you have to tone it down with either brown or black or a dark charcoal gray. You have something in the room that rests your eye. So that's what we did. And it worked out wonderful.
I think that's marvelous. So it seems to me that you have really, all your life, you've known deep inside your heart and your soul, you've known what you wanted to do. And
yes.
the world kept pushing you other direction. You said, no, I go over here. This is where I'm happy. So this, what kind of advice would you give people who are unhappy in what the world has pushed them into?
Follow your heart. If your gut feeling says that this is the wrong thing you're doing, just stop doing it. Stop doing it.
Yeah, it's not working, so stop, huh? You know, but
yeah.
it's very hard to get people to let go of what they're used to, even if what they're used to is very bad for them.
I know. Yeah, but most of the people are unhappy. They're unhappy.
Yes. Yes. Thoreau said most people live lives of quiet desperation.
Yes. And
that's
what
so
makes
sad.
People sick. You
that's
know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
People get sick because they are constantly under stress. They are unhappy with what they're doing. They know they should do something completely different, but they don't have the time to change. But sometimes life needs to change things for you.
Yes. Yes.
And,
absolutely.
And you know, just go with the flow. I'm not saying quit your day job. Just do what you need to do on the side until you're comfortable in knowing that this is going to work out, and then just break clean.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. But we do need to build. It seems that what you actually did was you worked for a living. You worked.
Yeah.
And you learned things along the way, which oddly enough, some of the things that you learned while you were doing those jobs you hated turned out useful in what you love doing. And that's
mm-hmm.
a fascinating way to live, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, with the chemistry and the biology and everything, it helps now because what I'm trying to do in interior design is be as green as possible and environmentally friendly as possible. So in my own home, I use reclaimed wood that is untreated. My floor will be untreated wood.
Mm.
And I mean, I was asked, why don't you want to polyurethane it? I said, why should I do that? I mean, 100 and 200 years ago, they made factories with wooden floors. They were
mm-hmm.
not varnished with polyurethane, and they had heavy machinery on top of it. They
That's
worked
right.
every single day, scuffed it up and banged it up, and now people clamor that wood that was mistreated for many, many decades. So why would I want to take that wood now into my home and put polyurethane on it? Why?
There you go. Absolutely. I hear you.
It's already, you know, tried and true that this
mm-hmm.
floor can take abuse.
Right. Now, I love it. I would love to be able to talk to you longer, but we're running out of time. So,
okay.
So do you have just one last thing you'd like to say to people and with taming their environment?
Reuse, reclaim, and repurpose.
Excellent.
Be as environmentally friendly to yourself and to the planet as possible, because especially in small apartments, you don't want toxic outgassing. You just don't want to have it. You don't want to sleep on a mattress that is basically a pool of waste. It's toxic waste. And furniture that is made out of toxic material that outgasses. You shouldn't be doing that, because you don't do your health a favor and you don't do your planet a favor.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, thank you so much for your advice. And
Thank you, Mary, for having me.
Oh, yes. We usually end with a little guided imagery. Would you like to participate with that?
What is that?
Guided imagery.
Yes.
Just close your eyes.
Okay.
And tighten up. Make your body a whole fist. Tighten up your belly button, your shoulders, your scalp, your toes, everything, until you feel yourself trembling, and then collapse like a rag doll.
Okay.
Is the very best way I know to relax your body instantly. And now that your body is relaxed, gather together all of your consciousness and imagine that you can just float on the breath. As you breathe in, take a deep, deep breath all the way down from your belly and just float on the air. Just float deep inside. And as you exhale, just blow away all the tension, everything that's bothering you, everything that is preventing you from being perfectly happy and wonderfully you. Just blow it away. Take another deep breath and just float deeper and deeper. Float through the layers of consciousness. And again, just blow away all of the garbage.
Okay.
Another deep breath. And now you're floating so deep and so wonderfully happy into a wonderful place that is perfect for you. It's supportive, it's nourishing, it's freeing, it's positive in every way. The universe is on your side. Everything is on your side. Nothing is against you. And just soak it up. Just feel that safe, beautiful, happy environment.
Okay.
Fill yourself up. Fill yourself up.
I'm in a forest.
And now let's just stretch a little bit, wiggle your fingers and toes. Take a deep breath, open your eyes, and you're back from a little mini vacation.
Yes. Now, I was in a beautiful forest.
Wonderful. Oh, that's marvelous.
With butterflies everywhere and colorful birds.
That's fabulous. Well, I hope everybody else had a wonderful trip, too. And now we have to say goodbye and love and light.
The same to you. Thank you, Mary, and thank you, whoever listened.